kaboom.
If you thought 4 hours a day, 1,200 minutes a week was enough, think again. He's the last remnants of the old republic, a sole bastion of fairness. He treats crackheads in the ghetto gutter the same as the rich pill poppers in the penthouse.
Wow.
The clearinghouse of hot takes break free for something special. The Fifth Hour with Ben Maller starts right now.
That it is, the Fifth Hour with Ben Maller and David Gascon, west of the 405. We are back at it again. A new weekend is upon us. And as I say, every single edition of the Fifth Hour, we do this eight days a week because 4 hours a night are not enough. And Friday, an opportunity to talk about one of my favorite topics, the business of sport. We're going to get to that in a minute, Gascon, which I'm excited about.
Yeah, you usually have, because it's the summertime for us in the National Football League, and it's always the time where you can showcase certain things around the NFL, and one of them is the NFL Book'em that you have crafted a few years ago. And I know Frank Clark was added to a list just a few days ago.
And as I pointed out on the radio show the other day, that I had the Chiefs and the NFL book him. And that's actually a twofer because he got arrested twice.
Yes.
For gun violations. We didn't even hear about the first one. And the problem is he's got such a generic name, Frank Clark.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't stand out. So there are, as you know, the people over at TMZ and some of these other websites, they constantly are looking through to see who got arrested to see if they can match the name up with the celebrity. But yeah, it's very hard when you're named Frank Clark. I mean, that's, you know, Joe Blow. You know, it's like, what are you doing? So yeah, it's like John Smith or something like that. So it's a pretty generic name. But we had that. But the sports business thing, the big story of the week, this NCAA story, and I didn't spend too much time on it on the radio show. I thought the podcast would be the perfect format to break this down because there's a lot of lawyers involved. There's a lot of bureaucrats. It's the perfect storm. And I thought, who better to break it all down than someone we've talked to before, Michael McCarthy, who is the senior writer. He's at frontofficesports.com. It's a somewhat recent startup. Covers sports business, and they do a really good job. It's a startup, so it's a new website. Doesn't have a lot of traction, but it's heading places. And Michael McCarthy, if you remember, he was on last time a couple months ago. He's worked for the USA Today. That's where I first came in contact with Mr. McCarthy. Sports Illustrated. He's had bylines at the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal. He's been all over the place covering sports business. And so we welcome in Michael McCarthy here to the Fifth Hour with Ben Maller and David Gascon. And so let's get into it. The Supreme Court ruling, a bombshell ruling. Is this the end of the NCAA as we know it? Michael, put it in layman's terms. How big a deal is this?
I truly believe it's beginning of the end for the NCAA. This is it. You know, just the way the Supreme Court changed sports betting in this country, I believe that with this ruling, the Supreme Court is going to completely change the landscape of college athletics and open the door for student athletes to be paid as they should be, in my opinion.
Yeah. So now, how does Title IX play this? I work with a guy on the overnight show, Eddie, who, and I've heard this from other people that say, well, there's no way this actually goes forward because you have the women's college basketball player, the women's tennis player is going to say, wait a minute. How come the football player at Alabama or the basketball player at Duke is getting all this money? Explain in layman's terms here, Michael, why that is not an issue as far as this is concerned.
I think it is an issue because, you know, once the cat is out of the bag, everybody's going to want a piece of the pie. But, you know, the fact remains that there are certain programs and certain sports that generate almost all of the revenue for college programs, you know, football being one of them and basketball being another. But, you know, that is not going to stop somebody from, you know, the crew team from saying, you know, I want my percentage of this. So, I mean, I think it all has to be worked out. It's going to be incredibly complicated. But where there's a will, there's a way. And when there's money, there's a way, too. I mean, if people are going from getting zero to getting something, I think they'll work it out.
Well, and it sounds, the way you explained that, it sounds like we're just going to have endless lawsuit after lawsuit after lawsuit once this thing actually, whatever it ends up being, happens, right? Is that the way you see it?
I do see it that exactly that way. I think there's going to be incredible wrangling over money, incredible wrangling over percentages. It's going to pit men's sports against women's sports, trans athletes. I mean, you know, you've opened up a can of worms here, Supreme Court, that is just going to, you know, be scorpions in a bottle fighting over the money. You know, it's not the worst thing in the world. I mean, somehow it'll all net out. And some people are going to, you know, get more money than others. And some people are going to be desperately unhappy. And some people are going to be thrilled. But I think this is the way it had to go. I think the Supreme Court made the right decision. And I think if, you know, you listen to people like Paul Feinbaum, who know their stuff about college sports, you know, this is the beginning of the end for the NCAA.
But I saw the story the other day that you guys at Front Office Sports, that the NFL agents are essentially working like vultures, right? Once this story came out with the Supreme Court, and I imagine the NBA guys are doing the same thing, although it's not as prevalent in, you know, in basketball because guys come out, they're one and done guys. But what kind of money, Michael, is being tossed around that you've heard and what's been reported with these NFL agents trying to suck up some of these top college players?
Oh, I mean, you're talking about potentially billions here and likeness rights and advertising rights and sponsorships. I mean, this is a gold rush that probably will be looked back a couple of years from now comparable to the sports betting gold rush we've all experienced since the 2018 Supreme Court ruling. I mean, just today, Canada paved the way for legalized sports betting. And, you know, Canada is an enormous market. Everybody loves to bet up there and they love football. So, you know, you're going to have two gold rushes going on at the same time. And, you know, the agents who are doing that, in my opinion, are being pretty clever and smart. They're being proactive. You want to get out ahead of this thing. You want to try to see around the corner what's next. You don't want to be reactive.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Ben Maller Show weekdays at 2 a.m. Eastern, 11 p.m. Pacific. Be sure to catch live editions of the Ben Maller Show weekdays at 2 a.m. Eastern, 11 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Michael, on that note, does this mean that it's a swift kick in the pants from the Supreme Court to Mark Emmert, where now you're going to possibly look at realignment? No more Power Fives, no more mid-majors. You're going to have conferences that are aligned based on a region, a West, a South, a Midwest, and an East.
Yeah, I think, you know, the head of the NCAA has to, you know, literally remove the Supreme Court's foot from his ass after this ruling. I mean, if that's even possible. I mean, it might take surgical intervention. But, yeah, I mean, everything is up for grabs now, including the TV rights, which, you know, I'm curious to see. You know, right now, ESPN has a virtual stranglehold on college athletic TV rights. You know, what's going to happen there? You know, the Supreme Court doesn't often do something like this where it just changes the world upside down. You know, it happens, you know, once every 5-10 years, but this is one of them.
Yeah, and you look at the Supreme Court, I mean, the majority are conservative, so it's pretty interesting to see them throw this thing for a loop. I guess the biggest question that that a lot of people might have on their mind is, why did it take so long for someone to advocate for these student athletes? Because you know it's not going to come from the universities themselves.
Money. You know, it's all about money. You know, the people who had the money, it was in their best interest to create a system that was virtual serfdom for these student athletes. And, you know, there was always the thing, well, they're getting an education, they're getting this. But, I mean, who's kidding who? I mean, the money that they were making off these kids compared to what the kids were getting back was so lopsided. I also think, David, to your point about why this is happening now, I actually think that the reason, one of the reasons it's happening now, is there's been so much focus by the media on the enormous sums that are paid to college coaches the Sabins of the world and the Urban Meyers, and the fact that these men are making, you know, $12 million a year, $13 million a year, and their kids on the field are making zero, nothing, zero, you know what I mean? I think was one of the things that put it over the top.
I hate to think radically about this, but do you think this can actually push college athletics and these universities towards, I don't know, like maybe satellite programs or academies? Because the reality is, if you're looking at college basketball, these kids are staying for a year, maybe two at max, unless they're mid-level. They're not going to go anywhere after the college days. And then for all intents and purposes, you're the college football players. They're there for a couple years, and only because they can't get there as a freshman. Do you think this turns into something where it's just a specialty program for these universities? Because what's the incentive for these programs to bring these kids in and have them be one and done?
Yeah, I think we're already at that. I think we've already got a two-tier system in college where, you know, the really special athletes who have a chance to make the pros are on that track, and the other athletes are doing it for nothing, for the love of the game. I have a daughter in high school who was a high school athlete. I have a son in college, so I'm real familiar with the, you know, amateur athletics. And I can tell you, you know, a lot of the kids I know and the kids I coached, you know, go into college athletes knowing that they'll never make the pros, or they'll never make a career out of it, but it's something that they love. Whereas, you know what I mean, you have that special athlete, you know, that kid who's born, you know, with a right arm like a thunderbolt, as Crash Davis would say in, you know, that great baseball movie. And they know that, you know, from the age of 10, 12 on, that they have a shot, and they're on a completely different track.
Well, Michael, as far, you mentioned the coaches and Nick Saban and these top coaches that make tens of millions of dollars a year. And I've already seen some of the propaganda from the NCAA and some of the schools that this is going to destroy the business of college sports. And this is a, you know, doomsday scenario some people have been hinting about. But what's the trickle down? Does this impact the top coaches' salaries at all? Do they continue to go up? Do they go down now because the players are getting some cut of the pie, if you will? How does this affect the coaches?
I think it is going to have a trickle-down effect, maybe more than a trickle-down effect. I think, you know, some of the college coaching salaries are going to be frozen, if not go down. And I think where it could really hurt is where you're seeing these coordinators at the big school who are themselves making multiple millions of dollars as a coach in waiting, as a head coach in waiting. I think it could really hit them. So, you know, I think playtime is over for these college coaches. You know, they had it sweet for a long time, especially the football coaches. You know what I mean? They made tens of millions of dollars. They never kept their promises to their players. They never kept their promises to their programs. And reality is going to be, you know, a tough wake-up call, but it's long overdue.
Absolutely. As far as the sports betting, you mentioned the gold rush, which we've seen here in the next few years in the U.S. It's already started state by state as they add more money. What are we talking about from a sports perspective? I remember, I think last time we had you on, we talked about there was an owner that had said they're going to make more money from gambling eventually than television. Just that whole mindset. I know some of the teams have partnered with sports gambling outfits. Is that just going to become the way of the world now that you have to have a deal with DraftKings or you have to have a deal with somebody? Explain what the landscape's going to look like, Michael, you know, 5 years from now.
Well, the landscape is going to, you know, be completely different. First of all, legalized sports betting is going to be completely accepted and normal. It wouldn't be surprised me to see, you know, the FanDuels and the DraftKings of the world own their own media rights. Let's say, you know, you're the Chicago Cubs or you're the Cleveland Indians, whatever, and your media deal comes up. Why couldn't a FanDuel or a DraftKings, you know, go ahead and buy those media rights themselves? I mean, you've already seen it with the Bally Sports Network. I think, you know, number two, that this whole situation in terms of being a gold rush, I think you're going to see media companies become betting companies and betting companies become media companies. In fact, it's happening already. We just did a story that ESPN is looking at opening their own branded sports book, similar to the old ESPN Zone restaurants. Meanwhile, you've got, you know, the FanDuels and the DraftKings are out there hiring talent, hiring reporters and analysts. So, I mean, would it surprise me 5 years from now to see Adam Schefter reporting for FanDuel? or DraftKings instead of ESPN? Not at all. Would it surprise me to see Woj delivering his Woj bombs for a sports betting company that's now a media company? Not at all, because they're the ones who could pay those salaries.
What kind of impact do you think Amazon's going to have on this entire game?
Amazon is what everybody is watching. I mean, I think the real key to watch with Amazon and Thursday Night Football is one word: megacasts. ESPN has proven that these megacasts have life. They've done it extremely well during the college football national championship game. And I think Amazon is going to go out there with a program that's going to be completely different than what we see on, you know, Sunday afternoon CBS. It's going to be, you know, one main telecast. You know, maybe you have an Al Michaels, you know, somebody who the fans are familiar with. But after that, there's going to be special telecasts devoted to all sorts of things. There's going to be a sports gambling Amazon game telecast. There's going to be, you know, the kind of megacast coverage that you see on ESPN. So I think Amazon is really looking to shake this up and to really segment it. They're not going to go out there with a, you know, one-size-fits-all telecast like we've seen for 50 years of the NFL. It's going to be specialized.
So on that note then, are these leagues going to have compliance units that'll police and try to look at the underbelly of this gambling universe? Or do you think that the leagues will rely on the FBI and some of these other agencies to root out any kind of wrongdoing?
I think the leagues have always sort of looked the other way and relied on, you know, law enforcement to let them know. I mean, you know, take a look at the Tim Donaghy scandal. I mean, that this went on for so long in the NBA, a crooked referee, you know what I mean, shading and fixing games. I mean, the NBA had no clue about this until it came out. I think that, you know, the sports leagues are not going to waste a lot of time and resources on compliance. I think they're counting on the fact that the increased legalization of sports betting is eliminating that organized crime element that was so dominant for decades.
Well, but yeah, you might look at it that way, but then I could counter and say, well, you could look at corruption with officials, game day officials, players, coaches, coordinators. I mean, it happened in Major League Baseball a couple of years ago with the 2017 Astros, and you know, Rob Manfred gave these guys a slap on the wrist. They got away scot-free, and then they got to keep a World Series title.
That's exactly my point. You know, the NBA had a crooked referee, and within a couple of months, the story had passed. You know, Major League Baseball had a World Series champion cheating in such an obvious way that they were almost laughing at the rules, and the sport went on. So I don't really think the sports as leagues take this stuff seriously in terms of, you know, we've got to root out compliance. Like, they deal with it when it comes. Mm.
Well, what I've heard, Michael, over the years from people I know that work in the sports gambling industry is that when they see something that's red flag, they will contact the NBA or the NFL. There's too much money. There's awkward bets being placed on a game. I mean, we hear the term circling the game, taking the game off the board. The interesting wrinkle to this to me, Michael, as a amateur gambler, is that when you have it everywhere, you can bet a little bit. You know, the argument with Vegas was that was controlled in Nevada, and if there was too much money coming in the legal sports betting, they'd take a game off the board. But there is a path where you could make a lot of small bets. It would be a pain in the behind, but you can make a lot of small bets nationally in Tennessee and New Jersey and Colorado and do it that way. It's a lot more work, though. It's a lot more work. But the sports leagues, if they are in business, Michael, as you said, with these, you know, these gambling, these, some of them have partnerships, they almost have no choice but to add a compliance officer, right? I mean, that's going to happen. If you are in the compliance business, you're going to have gainful employment in sports wagering, right? I mean, this is going to be a boom town, a boom business.
But look at all the sports scandals of the last couple of years. You know, every time we found out about these things, it always came from the outside, didn't it? And the league always appeared flat-footed. They were like, oh my gosh, what happened? We had no idea about this. So, I mean, you know, I think they'll talk a good game. They always do. But, you know, to your point about it, the best watchdogs they have are in Vegas themselves. The wise guys know when the lines are moving. The wise guys know when something is up. They'll be the first ones to alert the leagues, you know, to check out this game or that referee or that official, because they know it better than anybody.
And they don't want to lose money. That's the thing. They're not in it to lose money. That's the whole point of this.
This is the golden goose for them, you know? But, you know, I really think that the leagues, you know, they're all talk about this stuff. I mean, yeah, you know, they're going to have some ex-FBI guy or ex, you know, deputy commissioner of the New York City Police Department. And they sound good, but you know what I mean? They're always caught flat-footed and they're always caught by surprise and they always apologize later on. But it never seems to be them that uncovers the undoing. They're the ones who clean up the mess afterwards.
Michael, with the Eastern and Western Conference playoffs underway with Clippers and Suns and Bucks and Hawks, what have you seen just in terms of the overall ratings with the NBA? I mean, do you anticipate a huge slide, or do you think like, hey, these are fresh faces that are out there on the court and it's an opportunity for the NBA to promote these kids?
I think you just hit the nail on the head. I'm going to go counter here. I think it's great for the NBA to have some fresh faces. Do you realize this is the first time in a decade we've had an NBA finals where we haven't had LeBron or Steph?
Yeah.
You know, so I would argue a couple of years ago, we had Golden State Warriors fatigue. And I would argue that, you know, at a certain point, even though LeBron is a great attraction, people have LeBron fatigue. He's also a very polarizing athlete at this time with, you know, his political stances. So, I mean, I think it's a great opportunity for the NBA to get out there. I think, you know what I mean, having fans in the stands is an amazing thing. I mean, if you look at these games compared to the bubble games, it's two different things. You know, there's nothing like the excitement of having the crowd literally on top of the court at an NBA game. I mean, it's the best seat in the house. And now that it's back, I think the rating is going to be pretty good.
Well, and I want to ask you about that, Michael, because I get these stories that come out. You're in the sports business world, so you're the perfect guy to ask. And I work in radio, so I know how about spinning ratings in radio. I know how that game works. But it seems like a lot of that's going on in the NBA because you read one story and it's, you know, ratings are up 34% for the NBA playoffs. And then you read another story. It's like, well, actually, compared to 3 years ago, the NBA has lost 25% of their audience. So what is the truth here, Michael?
Well, the truth is often hard to decipher because there's lies, there's damn lies, and there's sports ratings. You know, as Mark Twain would say, you know, every time you get a ratings release from a network, you've got to parse it like you're reading Pravda or something. You know what I mean? Because they are going to work those numbers to make them, you know what I mean, seem as positive as they can. For example, you know, the NBA and other leagues this year are going to compare their ratings to the bubble and the pandemic when ratings were down. But they're not going to compare them to 2019, which is the last pre-pandemic. So that's an obvious one that they use. But I also think that, to your point, I've never seen such a fascination with sports TV ratings. And I've been doing this a long time. I mean, and we used to do a chart in USA Today. It was like this thing just for geeks and nerds, you know what I mean, like myself, you know what I mean, who cared about this. But nobody else cared. Now everybody's discussing it on sports radio. Everybody's discussing it on TV. And I think the reason for that is because everybody's trying to use ratings to prove their point. If you're of the opinion that the NBA getting political has hurt their ratings, then you're going to seize on their ratings, you know what I mean, as a way to bash LeBron James and the league taking stances on politics. If you're of the opinion that, you know what I mean, the NBA being political has no impact on ratings, then you're going to seize on the positive ratings this year as proof to your point. So I think politics has kind of infected the ratings game, and everybody's using ratings to tee off to a fare thee well on whatever pet cause they have.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Ben Maller Show weekdays at 2 a.m. Eastern, 11 p.m. Pacific. Be sure to catch live editions of the Ben Maller Show weekdays at 2 a.m. Eastern, 11 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Michael, I was going to say, I think the other thing maybe for some of the other leagues is just the branding purposes, right? Because, you know, Major League Baseball cutting off games for, you know, with ESPN, you know, their Sunday night baseball telecasts and what they do in the middle of the week. Same thing with the NHL going from the NBC platform and obviously now to USA and ESPN splitting those packages up. I think the other thing is we just look at it because, you know, Ben and I talk about on the regular during the NFL season. It's like top 50 programs in the United States in 2021. And over 30 of them are week one or week seven or week eight in the NFL. And the other ones, college football, Bama and LSU, yep, or Bama and Auburn or something like that.
Yeah, it's you know, the NFL is so dominant when it comes to TV. It's not just the premier sports property. It's premier entertainment property. It just kicks the hell out of everything. You know, scripted dramas, reality TV, you name it. It's like the NFL went out of business. What would we watch? But, you know, I am not one of these, you know, optimists who says, well, you know, things are going to get completely up to normal. I think the pandemic changed a lot of things. I think the pandemic changed viewing habits. I think people learned how to live without sports in some cases. I think people learned how to watch different things. And I think we're still seeing, you know, the lingering effects of that. I'm hoping it'll get back to pre-pandemic levels, but I'm not as confident about that as anybody, as some of these other people are.
What's the business practice for you guys at Front Office Sports? Like, how are you guys approaching these things? I do see that you guys bring on a lot of interns along the way to help provide them with some kind of platform too.
Yeah, our whole platform has been growth. I mean, I started there 2 years ago and we were a small startup, but, you know, we broke a lot of news along the way and we punch way above our weight when it comes to coverage, you know, against the big guys. And we have just been growing by leaps and bounds. You know, it's a $615 billion business. I think our main competitor, which is Sports Business Journal, you know, had the field to themselves for a while. And I think everybody loves a little bit of a horse race, right? Everybody loves a challenger. You know, if you got Coke, you want Pepsi. And, you know, now you've not only got us in the field, but you got Sportico. So this whole idea of, you know, sports business and this whole coverage, and, you know, Ben knows this as well as anybody, has just exploded. It's taken on a life of its own.
Yeah, it's been crazy the last couple of years for sure. I want to go back to baseball, though, for a second, because you mentioned how fans embrace not having sports. 134 days we went. Not that I kept track, Michael, without a professional sporting event, as I was doing sports radio every night. But it's not about me. So Major League Baseball having a likely nuclear offseason after the World Series, the labor, you know, deal is up, and there's a lot of my people in baseball say it's they're not going to have a regular start to the 2022 season. And every time one of these things happens, people say, well, that's going to be it. That's going to be the end. I don't think it's going to be the end of baseball, but how much more damage can be done? Kind of paint the picture, if you will, Michael, on what that would mean, a work stoppage at the start of next baseball season.
You know, no league has done more to shoot itself in the foot than Major League Baseball. I mean, you know, there should be an intervention sometimes with this league, the way, you know what I mean, they try to self-destruct. If that happens, you know what I mean, they're going to, you know, throw away all the momentum they've had. I mean, you know, they're just coming out of the Astros thing, the garbage cans, and then, you know, you're going to have this. This year you got the doctored baseball. I mean, that's old school. I mean, we're going back to Gaylord Perry in the spitball here. So, I think, you know, baseball has got to get a couple of years under its belt where – it's got nothing but good stories. You know what I mean? The cheating turns people off. You know what I mean? A work stoppage would be horrible because, you know, baseball more than ever has become kind of a local sport. And, you know, if you have a work stoppage, boy, that's going to be trouble.
Yeah. And Michael, also following that up, a story within the last month or so, some of the guys on the Mets and some of the other players around baseball were throwing out, lobbing accusations that, you know, the reason baseball changes, that the ball actually changes, that Major League Baseball corporate changes the ball, is to artificially keep salaries down in free agency. That you know, there are players that actually believe this, that it's, you know, to me it seems outrageous. I don't think baseball is that bright. If they are that bright, why is Mookie Betts and Fernando Tatis and all these guys getting these massive contracts? Explain to me your perspective on why so many baseball players, more than just a couple, have said that there's something to that conspiracy.
Yeah, because they're dumb. I mean, I believe that, you know, Pete Alfonso's theory on the baseball about as much as I believe that story about the weasel or the raccoon or whatever in the thing. I mean, the simple fact remains that professional athletes can never look themselves in the eye and, you know, blame themselves. I mean, when we were growing up, you know, batting average was valued. You know what I mean? The ball was put in play. I mean, you know, the ones we adored and the players we followed, you know, the George Bretts and the Rod Carews, you know, who were able to hit 340s. Now these players, you know, all either want to hit home runs or they strike out. Well, that's on them. And you know what I mean? And if the pitchers are doctoring the ball, and I believe that they are, you know what I mean, with this new ticky-tack stuff, then that's on them. That's on the players. That's not on Major League Baseball or some, you know, secret chemist in a lab somewhere in an underground bunker doctoring the baseballs. I mean, you got to be kidding.
Michael, we've seen this, you know, it seems like every decade, right? If it's not steroids in 1998, it's the trash cans and the videography that was taking place a handful of years ago and the doctor of the baseball. I mean, the reality is people are still going to come out to watch the games. People are still going to be fans of the game. There's nothing that can be done. But do you think in the end, maybe Major League Baseball says, hey, we need to have a new guy that leads this organization, this league, and not Rob Manfred?
I don't think we're at that point with Manfred. You know, I think Manfred has done a solid job. What the game needs is action. The game needs action. I mean, I was at the Yankee game with my family on Sunday, and the Yankees had three hits. They won the game, you know, thanks to, you know, a Gary Sanchez double. But there's just not an act, you know what I mean? The shifts and the rise of these incredible pitchers has turned the game into kind of a drag where, you know, it's nothing but strikeouts and fly balls and pitching changes, 19 pitching changes a game. You know what I mean? I don't know if you need a new commission as much as you need a sport that really grabs you by the throat and really, you know, says, wow, this game is fun. I mean, you know, you guys mentioned Mookie Betts a minute ago. I mean, having players like him who are so exciting and so dynamic, you know, watching him run the bases or that throw he made from the outfield, that's what the game needs. Bring us back the baseball we love, which is make some contact, get some runners on base, have some tag outs, have stealing bases. You know, let's have the action that we fell in love with.
Mike, I got some bad news for you. I don't think the Yankees are going to have any of that for this season for you. So,
I think you're right. But, you know, I was impressed with Sanchez. I mean, his swing looks good. Yeah. And I just think the Yankees are lopsided. I mean, you have a team that's, you know, relied for 80 years on left-handed hitting. And, you know, they're a right-handed hitting team. And, you know, besides DJ LeMayo, you know what I mean, they have no contact hitters. And they have no idea how to manufacture runs. I mean, the Yankees are a perfect example of what's wrong with baseball. I mean, do you see the Yankees move anybody over? Do you see the Yankees steal a base? You ever see the Yankees create a run? No. You know, they're always waiting for, you know, Giancarlo to hit one out. So they really are in a capsule form definition of what's wrong with the game today.
Yeah, the three true outcomes, right? Strikeout, walk, home run. That's it. Nothing else. Don't hit behind a runner. Don't do any of that. Michael, I want to bring up the story that I want to get your perspective on Lamar Jackson, because he doesn't have an agent. He's about to sign, we think, a mega, mega extension. It could be the biggest contract in NFL history with the Ravens. And I've heard some whispers that, you know, this is not going over well in the agent community, per se, because if he actually pulls this off and you know, this is seen as a foundational blow, if you will, to agents because they because of the commission. But explain to me how concerned, or if I'm right on this, if what I'm hearing is correct, how concerned the agents are that Lamar is doing this without representation.
I'd be very, very concerned if I was an agent. I mean, there was a Seattle Seahawks linebacker who did the same thing a couple of seasons ago, whose name escapes me, Bobby something or other, and he basically negotiated his own deal and did it well.
Bobby Wagner.
Yeah, and it was kind of like everybody afterwards said, well, he didn't have an agent, and, you know, he didn't get taken. Right? He did pretty well for himself. So it can be done. And once you demonstrate that it can be done without giving up that little slice to the agent, you know, more players are going to do it. So, you know, to your point, I am very concerned. I am on red alert. If I'm an agent, I am giving, you know, Tom Cruise level comfort and service to my clients, you know, showing up in Phoenix for the game or whatever he did in the movie. And I'm trying to keep my clients as happy as I can.
How much do agents get in the NFL? I know in baseball, I know more about baseball, but in the NFL, what cut do those guys typically get? Is it 4%? Is it 3%? And what have you heard?
Depending on the agent. I mean, obviously, you know, if you're Tom Condon or somebody like that, you know, you can get a lot more. But I heard, you know, a while back that it was in the area of around 3%. But, you know, it depends. It depends on, you know what I mean, how powerful you are as an agent, how what your reputation is like, what other clients you have. I mean, so many things in sports, and I think we've all learned this, happen because athletes know each other. What do athletes do? You know what I mean? Use my agent, Joe. Use my agent, Jane. That's how, you know, they really get their clients, by other athletes introducing them to people who they trust. And, you know, to me, that trust level and that familiarity is more important than the percentage.
Interesting. And as far as one last thing on the broad, we'll go back to the broadcasting thing, Michael. I've seen several stories here recently that the hot commodity, I don't know if I believe this or not, in sports NFL commentary is RG3, Robert Griffin III. Is this a story that was planted by his agent? Is this legitimate? Is there a bidding war between major broadcast companies for Robert Griffin III? Explain that to me.
I think RG3 is a hot commodity. You know what I mean? I don't know if he's the hottest thing since Tony Romo, or, you know what I mean, if Fox and ESPN are going to go out of business bidding against each other for him. I mean, it's pretty normal. You know, every year, as you know, there's, you know, a new list of players and coaches who try to enter broadcasting. And some of them give great auditions and some of them stink. And he gave apparently a great audition. But, you know, RG3 still wants to play. So, you know, there's no guarantee he's even going to go into the broadcast booth. But, you know, I think it's kind of like, you know, major league sports. You know, we're always looking for the new guy, the new hot star, you know, somebody who could come in and sort of, you know, change the world the way Romo did. I mean, I remember when Romo started, you know, there were other people, you know, including me, who were like, and I will own this, were like, how can you give this guy, a complete rookie, you know what I mean, the number one job? What are you, out of your mind, CBS? And sure enough, he proved me and a lot of people wrong. So I think RG3 is a legit contender for a job. In terms of, you know, some of the hoop nanny, you know, I think a lot of that is hype.
Absolutely. Hey, Michael, thank you. And again, promote the website. It's a great website if you're interested in the business of sports. It's Front Office Sports. You're all over Twitter. How can people find you, Michael? How can people follow you?
Well, thank you again for the invite. We are at frontofficesports.com. We cover the intersection of sports and business. And my Twitter handle is MMcCarthyRev.
All right, MMcCarthyRev. Very simple. All right, thanks. Have a great weekend, Michael. Thank you.
Guys, thanks so much.